If you're haunted and harassed by your own inner critic, if you've ever been curious about why hypnosis works so well, if you're a seasoned hypnotist, or if you suspect that the inner critic is actually hypnotizing you to hold back from reaching the greatness that you know deep down is inside you, lean in and get inspired to get out of your comfort zone and create your one precious life with purpose and intention. If you like this show, you'll love my powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, because it gives you crystal clear guidance and direction and illuminates an ingenious way to make triumphant decisions, no matter how stuck you feel or how confused you were. This powerful hypnosis audio is my gift to you when you go to theimpostermonster.com. Again, that's theimpostermonster.com. Don't forget the. Theimpostermonster.com. And yes, I'm done saying it. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. I'm Lori Hammond, and I'm truly grateful for you. Okay, I am doing something brand new, and everyone who's listening to my podcast is the first to know about it. In January, just in time for New Year's resolution, I am releasing a weight loss program unlike anything I've done in the past. I've been doing programs like this for about 3 years now. And this program is going to actually help you create a new set point for your body. So if you feel like your metabolism is broken or your hormones are out of whack, or you just can't get off that up and down yo-yo weight loss roller coaster, you will love this program because it provides a structured food program. And I've never done something like this before. This is really bold. Combined with hypnosis to help you achieve that set point and easily arrive at and maintain your ideal weight from now on. I would absolutely love to have you there. And the only way you can get in is to private message me on Instagram or Facebook, or to send me an email at lori@trancypants.com. That's lori@trancypants.com. You can find that in the notes wherever you're watching this video as well. I would absolutely love to have you there. I just finished this podcast with Kathy Groover, and I'm putting this at the beginning of the audio because there are a couple things I want to make you aware of. The first one is that there is some strong language, some appropriately used strong language throughout this episode. So if you have little ones around, you might want to cover their ears or play this at another time. And then the second thing is Kathy and I were having some technical difficulty as we were recording, and there are places where the audio cuts out. And I'm still not sure how this is going to edit through, but it's such valuable content that I ask that you bear with me and that you listen through the glitches. You will definitely get the gist of the conversation, and I think that you will have so much value if you listen to this. There are so many nuggets of wisdom, and I hope that you enjoy hearing this as much as I enjoyed recording it. Have an amazing day and enjoy the show. Welcome, everyone. I am so excited today because I have Kathy Groover, an award-winning author, professional speaker, and former actor with over 30 years' experience in mind-body medicine and human behavior. An entertainer and educator, imbuing all of her programs with practicality and passion. With a West Coast mentality and an East Coast delivery, her humorous, down-to-earth, engaging style has captivated audiences on 4 continents, 3 cruise ships, and a handful of islands, as well as 2 amazing TED Talks. Kathy has written several books, which have garnered 12 awards, hosted a TV series based on her first book, developed a stress reduction program for the U.S. military, and co-hosts the Fire and Earth podcast. She has penned countless articles and appears regularly as a guest on the radio, TV, and in print media. She recently appeared on the Dr. Phil show, which I think is so awesome, and has earned her PhD in natural health and studied mind-body medicine at the famed Benson Henry Institute for Mind-Body Medicine at Harvard. Kathy lives in Santa Barbara, California with her boyfriend, her guinea pig Listo, and her cat Alistair. For fun and stress relief, this is my favorite thing about Kathy. Kathy does flying trapeze and plays Dungeons and Dragons. Thank you so much for being here today, Kathy. You have been an inspiration to me personally, and I am so grateful to have you here. So with that introduction, it's so hard for me to even know what to ask you first, but I'll forego the traditional question of why do you do what you do and what do you do? And talk to me about what it was like to go on Dr. Phil's show.
It was a crazy stress roller coaster of a couple of days, because when I was, years back, I was pitching to shows and I was doing tons of media, and like every day I was pitching media to do stuff, and I kind of let that go. I was like, okay, I don't need to do that anymore. Da, da, da. And literally out of the clear blue on a Sunday afternoon, my boyfriend and I were about to go to the beach. And I said, hey, babe, let me just check my email real quick and see if I'm missing anything. And boy, was I glad I checked, because it was a producer saying, media request Dr. Phil show. And I thought, oh, it's probably, they want me to pay them to like pitch me for shows. And I opened it up and went, hang on, hold the beach. And he's like, what? And I'm like, I might be going on Dr. Phil. And he's like, what? And so that started 3 days of, is it happening? Is it not happening? And then when they decided I was a go, it was go. So it was that kind of hurry up and wait, now hurry up thing that I was so used to as an actor, that I was so used to when I was doing media stuff. I mean, I remember sitting in my office at like 2 o'clock in the morning doing Sky News London because of the time difference. And that was, again, one of those like, hurry up, we need you now sort of things. And my poor boyfriend, he's such a sweet, gentle soul. He's never seen me go into full blown type A crazy shitstorm thing. So he's standing in our little house and I'm like, put this in a suitcase, grab that. And he's going, is there something? And he just didn't know what to do with me. So it was an amazing experience. I was so happy to help. I helped out on the show as a massage expert, a gentleman, I'm not even going to call him that, this doofus in the South was accused by about 18 women of sexual assault and weirdness on the massage table. So I came on and kicked his ass a little bit and sort of was the sounding board for Dr. Phil to ask him the right questions and talk about ethics and massage and what massage should be and why his ad was bullshit and that whole thing. So it was amazing and a beautiful experience and crazy until I got there.
That is so intriguing. I love that. So what was the time frame between that first email and when you were there?
So it was about Sunday at 1:30 in the afternoon that I got her message. We went back and forth a little bit. And then Monday was my boyfriend's year anniversary. So like I wasn't obsessively checking, but every once in a while I'd be like, hoping that something was going to happen. Monday night, so full 24 hours, Monday night at about 10 o'clock at night, we were exhausted. We went parasailing and we had this great dinner and like we had this great anniversary. And I got an email from them saying, can you do some video? Can you answer the questions that you did, but on video? And I'm thinking, now? I mean, it was like 10:15 at night. And I was in this panic of, wait, do they need me to jump on Zoom? Like, is this camera ready? Like, what do they want? And then the next day we went back and forth a little bit. I finally booked it on Tuesday at like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And they needed me on set Wednesday morning at 8:15. So that was packing a suitcase, heading to LA, getting a rapid COVID test, because their safety measures were precise and beautiful. I had clients that I had to cancel. I had clothing I had to gather. I had to talk to producers. I had to sign contracts. I had to, so once they said yes, it was a 2-hour whirlwind of getting me down to LA.
Wow, that's incredible. And has that episode aired? Can I link to that in the notes? Okay.
It aired. It's not online.
I think I've reached out to you before and told you this story, but for the people who are listening, when I first started learning hypnosis, it's just this like this deluge of information, and you find out that there's so many incredible people doing this work and who do I learn from first? And I actually purchased and downloaded all of, I think it was like the 2017 HypnoThoughts talks, it might have been 2018. And I just went through them one at a time. And when I got to yours, I was so inspired. And you told stories about overcoming your fears and about connecting and about putting yourself out there. And you're one of the first people that influenced me to let go of my imposter syndrome and start taking action, even though it was really scary. You have inspired me with your action. And even just what you've said in these first few minutes, you know, the skydiving and the parasailing and the trapeze. Tell me a little bit about just what's underneath the way, if I were to crawl inside your mind and listen to your thoughts and think the way you think, talk to me about how you think about business and about living a vibrant, full life. I know that's a big question.
No, I'm just thinking, God, what would you find in my brain? it's, you know, when you go into like an electronics store and they have all the TVs on so you can see how cool the picture is. I think that's probably what my brain looks like. I'm not ADD. I can hold multiple thoughts at once. I can hold multiple ideas at once. Things that I mean, I have one of those memories that, like, I'll bump into someone on the street and have no clue what their name is, but I can tell you what our last conversation was, where I saw them, what I, you know, so my brain, I think my brain's a little different than everybody else's. Maybe me and Mike Mandel, we might have the same brain. I'm incredibly driven. Whether it's, you know, I mean, like, my vacations are so type A, I'm not going to park it on a beach for a week. I might lay there for an hour or two, but for the most part, like, I want to see the sights. I want to explore these things. I want to find stuff that no one's found. I want to go to that hotel that's haunted. I want to, you know, go to the ruins. I want to spelunk. I want to scuba dive. I want to experience everything. I want to suck up every opportunity, whether that's business or pleasure. And I don't know exactly where that came from. I think part of it is I lost my mom young. And when you watch that as a kid and you realize that life is ridiculously fragile and that you never know at any given moment if you're going to have a next moment, I think that was very real for me very early. My favorite grandmother died when I was 8 and my mom died when I was 18. And I have not stopped losing people, like, just, you know, friends, family. And I think that really changes how your brain works. So I think it's made me realize, you know, seize the day now, which, I mean, that's the point of seize the day. You can't seize the day tomorrow. But I think that's part of it. I think seeing how fragile life was made me realize I want to live every single moment of life. I want to experience everything. I want to taste it. I want to smell it. I want to, why would I not want to have that feeling?
Yeah.
And so I've lived my life from that place of go for it. So when I have a business idea, I go for it. You know, I there's not much that stops me. Do I have fear about it? Sure. Do I have hesitation? Yes. Do I have people going, what the hell's wrong? You're crazy. Why are you doing that? Yeah. And you just have to decide to go. You just have to do it. You have to jump off the cliff and do it.
Yeah. I love that. And that lines up so much. I watched your TED talk where you talked about warthog carpaccio. And if it's not putting you too much on the spot, I'm going to ask you to share that story. But as I was listening, I was thinking, you know, this idea that you have underneath, and I want to share this with people who are listening. You can model this, what Kathy is showing you. She's telling you how she does this with a just go for it attitude. And I know the places where I've leaped forward in my business have been when I have stopped being afraid and thought, what if this will work, and just give it a shot. So will you talk to us about warthog carpaccio and seizing the moment?
I will, but here's what I want to say first. So when I'm coaching people and people give me options of things, I was coaching a client today, and not to give too much personal detail away, but his thing was either I move to this other country and I leave my relationship, or I stay in the relationship and I don't move to this other country and I, you know, either way, I'm losing something. And I said, well, what about these other options? There's a myriad number of options. We just have to be creative with it. And our brain looks towards negative things because it's trying to protect us. Totally understand that. It also moves towards things that are familiar. So the more we practice positivity and practice getting those things we want, the more opportunities we're going to have to get what we want. Want to throw that out there first. So warthog carpaccio, I love food. I love food. I love wine. I love wine so much. It's a mindfulness practice. It's an experience. It's a ritual. I love it. And so I went to South Africa I was hired to do a big keynote. They sent me to a safari resort, which was amazing. And then I spent a couple of days on my own in Cape Town. And I said to the owner of my bed and breakfast, I said, I want to go to a real South African restaurant. I don't want to go where the tourists go. I want the most authentic food I can have. And he goes, ah, and he sent me to this place. I walked in, they had dancers and they had music and it was amazing. And the waiter takes one look at me and hands me this very Americanized menu. And I looked at it and I went, no, I want, like, what would you eat? And he goes, ah. And he brings over this board of specials handwritten on a chalkboard. And one of the things was warthog carpaccio. And I'm thinking, why would I not try that? Like, when the hell am I ever gonna get freaking warthog carpaccio again? Now, granted, 3 days earlier on the game drive, I saw warthogs, which was kind of interesting. So I ended up going back to this restaurant 2 nights in a row because I wanted to try all this food. So I had all this game meat that I'm not gonna find anywhere else. And the warthog carpaccio was so good. It was so beautifully prepared. It was just such an amazing experience. And when I told, first of all, my father lost his mind when I said I had that, because he's a steak, potatoes, salad, iceberg lettuce, ranch dressing kind of guy. Nothing adventurous about him from an eating perspective. So he thought that was the most disgusting thing ever. And I said, you know what, here's the deal. I said, when am I going to get to try that again? And if I don't like it, you know what? I don't have to eat it. And they brought me a side dish. I think it was called like pop or something like that. It was this white, looked like I could spackle something with it. And I smelled it and went, and I tried it and I went, that is disgusting. I didn't say that, of course. I didn't eat it. You don't have to, there's no clean plate club. And I know some of you are going, yes, there is. There's no clean plate club. Nowhere is it written that you have to do that. That's an old, outdated belief system that you have to eat everything on your plate. You don't have to, but try something new. And so to me, it's like every place I travel, I want the local food. I want the local wine. I want the local experience. I want to sit with locals and talk to them about their life. I don't want to go by what I see in the news or what I read in Rick Steves or what I want that personal experience.
When did you start using hypnosis?
Let's see. So I started, well, I've been doing hypnosis since like junior high. I don't know how I found it, but I was always fascinated by it. So I was the one in high school playing with, gosh, what is his name? Oh man, he just passed away recently. Not Stephen Halpern. Anyway, there's a gentleman that he did a lot of tapes. I'm dating myself. And so I was doing these visualization tapes and I was doing self-hypnosis. And I was doing past life regression. In college, I studied with Roger Wolger, who's also no longer with us, unfortunately. And so I was the one on Friday nights in college regressing my friends to past lives while everybody else was partying. I was that person. I wonder why I didn't have any friends. The two other nerds are sitting there, you know, doing past life regression. Everyone else is drinking and getting high, and I'm doing regression. I added it officially to my practice probably 6 or 7 years ago. I studied and right after I showed up at HypnoThoughts, I think I've been there all but, well, this past year because of COVID, but I did still speak. So I've been there all but I think the first year. I think I joined up the second year and I've been consistently there since. So it's, yeah.
That's incredible.
So fabulous.
Yes. And I know the presentation that I heard of yours, you were talking about the importance of putting yourself out there, of telling everybody what you do. So if you were to give a piece of advice to someone who's just starting out, who's perhaps feeling a little bit scared and hasn't yet adopted that what if attitude, like, let's just see what happens attitude, what advice would you give to someone who's just starting out and is terrified that this isn't going to work?
Well, if you're terrified it's not going to work, then it's not going to work. I mean, that's just math. I mean, that's just how it goes. Make sure you're really good at what you do. Make sure you're at a competent level that the people that are coming to you are truly going to get a good service. Now, I mean, that's the first thing. I'm assuming that everyone that's listening is already good at what they do. That's why they're tuning in. So you just have to then know that. You know, and I will never forget, it was my first day of freshman acting. I was a theater major and we sat in a big circle and it was horribly intimidating because I was the best actress in my high school. I had a lead, I won an award. And I suddenly found myself looking at this group and going, these were all the best actors in their school. They all won the awards. I'm no longer good. I'm surrounded by people who are probably half better than me. And it was terrifying. It was this horrible revelation of maybe I wanted to stay in my hometown where I could just be the big fish in the small pond. And the teacher went around the room, Shirley Tannenbaum, she was incredible. She went around the room and we said why we wanted to be there and did we want to be famous, which was a trick question because she didn't want people who wanted to be famous. And she turned to one of the students and she said to her, are you a good actor? And the student went, I'm good. And she goes, you're fired, screw it. Turned to another student and said, are you a good actor? And he went, hell yeah. And she goes, great, you just got the job. And she said, if you learn nothing else from this class, if you can't tell me that you're a good actor, why am I gonna hire you? She goes, because there's every single person in this room that's just as good, if not better than you, who are gonna tell me they're good. I can tell you exactly what I'm terrible at, and I can tell you what I'm really good at. So it's like you have to have that self-awareness and that self-authority to prune that little bonsai tree and know what you are and are not good at. And if you're not good at it and you want to do it, get good at it.
I love that. That's beautiful advice. And what would you say to a person who's not sure, you know, maybe they have just completed a training and they've started practicing these techniques with a few friends and they aren't sure they're good at it yet. What is the best way to become proficient at one of these new skills?
Feedback, feedback, feedback. Mm-hmm. You know, ask people who, this is where I sometimes think friends and family aren't the best. Because they're going to so often, oh, that was so good. You did so good. And then they realize you didn't do so good. Ask another hypnotherapist or another dancer or another trapeze. I mean, you know, ask someone in the know, was that good? You know, and I studied at a school that I could do mostly distance and only pop up part of the time. And I was stunned at the amount of people who were terrified to hypnotize someone near the end of the program. And I'm thinking, how long have we been doing? You better be able to get someone in trance quickly. You know, how are you doing this and not knowing that you have confidence to even put the person in hypnosis? Forget the scripts and the techniques and all that crap after it. You have to be able to sink the person in or else you're not really doing the thing you just studied. So practice it. Ask other people who know. You know, I'm not going to turn to someone off the street and go, what'd you think of my trapeze trick? Because they're going to be blown away. That's the coolest thing ever. It sucked. I'm going to ask someone in my class, can you watch this? Can you video this? Can you, you've got to ask someone that has the same, if not more knowledge than you, if what you just did was good.
Excellent. And a big piece of what I'm hearing is that practice. You have to actually be using these tools and implementing them. And there are a lot of safe places you can do this. There are so many practice groups, even virtual ones online that you can do with other therapists. You are not going to get better trying to think about getting better, trying to psych yourself up for being ready. You have to actually start using it and it's going to be scary and it's okay to do it anyway. One of my mentors when I was a hairstylist was the owner of my salon. And I remember him sitting me down at the table and saying, Lori, one of the most valuable things you can ever do is ask for feedback. And this is like my personality type. I love words of affirmation. And so it killed me when people would start to give me feedback. I wanted to get so defensive and get my feelings hurt. And I still often will do that for a second. I'll get my feelings hurt. I'll feel defensive. And then it's like, thank you. You have given me a gift because the people who are willing to be honest with you, like to say, yeah, your butt does look big in those pants. Those are the people that you can trust and the people that are going to help you grow. You know, hopefully your butt's not growing, but you know, the people that are going to help you move forward in life is the people that are willing to be honest about where you can improve.
Exactly. Feedback is great. And I just heard someone say this and I realize it's the most wise thing. Now, if it's, you're in the dressing room and it's does my butt look fat in this dress? Don't wait till the person buys it, wears it to the cocktail party to go, oh yeah, it does, a little too late. If it's something like, hey, you know, I worked with this client today. Can you watch this video and tell me what you think? Or I just got off stage doing a performance. Can you tell me what you think? We are only ready to accept the negative feedback about 2 to 3 days later.
Okay.
All we want to hear when we step off stage is that you were fucking amazing. It was the best thing ever. We're not ready to hear the negative feedback at that point. We're still riding the high of what we just did. So if someone hits you with negative feedback at that point, it's going to throw you completely off. At least this is what I'm finding to be real in my life. I get speaker feedback sometimes right that moment, you know, they'll fill out a form and I'll get to look at them. Sometimes it's weeks later. When it's weeks later, I'm not as offended by the person that said, she talked too fast, it stressed me out. I'm like, 98 other people said it was hilarious, so whatever. Had I heard that right afterwards, I probably would have beat myself up a little bit about
it. So tell me where the balance is, because I remember, like, after I gave my HypnoThoughts talk this year, my first talk 2 years ago was a standing room only room, and it just, I was really happy with how it went and I felt so great at the end. And then this year I went and there were four people in the room, and it was like one of the biggest rooms, the room that Freddie Jacquin had been in last year. And there are four people in there because there's almost no one at the whole conference. And I just felt like the whole thing was, it was just a joke. Like, I was so not proud of myself. And I'm walking upstairs and I remember on my way back to the hotel room, just beating myself up and thinking, well, next time I'm going to do this better and I should have done this. And so I think there's this balance, and especially right at the end, like you're saying, of just congratulating yourself for doing it imperfectly, for taking action. At least you're one of the brave ones who's putting yourself out there. So will you speak to that?
Yeah. I think it is finding out what is true. What do I know to be true? I ask myself that all the time, and feelings aren't facts. So is it something you did? Could you have written the description differently? Could you have advertised it more? Could have, maybe, I don't know. Was it the fact that there were fewer people at the conference because we're having a global pandemic? Was it that you were opposite of somebody that always fills the room? Was it the luck of the draw scheduling wise? Was it the last of the day on the last day when people have gone home? You know, there's rational reasons why things happen, and there's always ways to improve what we do. So you have to definitely find the balance in that. I'm sure it was nothing that you personally did that these people didn't show up. It was a weird year. And I know there's been times where I've had my talk and it just happens, luck of the draw. I'm opposite of Jason Lynette or Ken Guzzo or Freddie Jacquin. I'm like, well, no one's coming to mind. Yep. You know, it's just, but people start. And you always have to know that everybody that ends up exactly where they are supposed to be. Mm. I did a talk in Sacramento. There was this huge book fair. And so they contacted me and said, we'd love to give you a booth with your books. We'd love to have you do our main room keynote on stress. We're not going to charge you any. We can't pay you, but we're not going to charge you anything. And I went, what the heck? I didn't have anything else to do. I had in-laws up there. So I hauled all my books. I drove up to Sacramento and I stood at this booth for 3 days with my books, which is something I don't normally do anymore. I remembered why. And they put me in the giant room. I mean, this was a freaking auditorium in this library. It could have sat probably 500 people. And I get there and I get everything set up and my PowerPoint's ready to go and I'm doing my thing, and I look out and there's my in-laws in the audience. Huge auditorium. My in-laws in the audience. And I went, am I in the wrong like, nope, that was right where I was supposed to be. And, you know, front row, my five in-laws with the camera ready to go. And I'm like, oh shit. One of the like helpers, volunteer people comes by and she pops her head in. She kind of looks around, kind of makes a face. And then she goes, Kathy, do you need anything before you get started? And I said, yeah, I need a dozen people. And she goes, okay. 2 days later, here comes this woman with 12 people.
What?
And I'm thinking, what the hell did she do? She walked into the break room where all the volunteers were having lunch and said, you all come with me. We're going to watch a talk. My next thought was, oh God, now I'm with these people that don't want to be here. They were trying to have their lunch. They don't know who I am. They did not choose to be here because they were all like 18 to 25 too. And I'm like, oh, this is going to suck. Like, they don't want it. They don't care what I'm saying. They spread out throughout the auditorium. So it made it look like more people. And I did my talk and I had laughter and I had tears and I had amazing applause. I sold a book to pretty much every person that came. And I had all of these kids, I'll say kids, come up to me afterwards and go, oh my God, this was just what I needed to hear. And I was having so much stress because I'm just graduating and I don't know what I want to do. And, you know, can I get your books and can I call you with questions? And my in-laws got to see me perform for the first time ever. It was such an amazing experience, which I wouldn't have had if there were 500 people shoved in that auditorium. Everything unfolded exactly the way it should have. And I get a good story out of it too. Those four people, they're for a reason, and they got everything out of your presentation that they were supposed to have. And then people watch the video later. So I've stopped questioning these things. It's just, it is what it is, and everything's exactly as it should be in that moment.
I love that. And that's such a beautiful thing for anyone listening to model as well. That idea that you are exactly where you're supposed to be, that this is how it's supposed to happen. I tell myself that all the time, and I'm not totally sure it's true, but I know that believing it sure does make my life a whole lot happier.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell yourself whatever story you want. You can tell yourself the scary story of, oh God, I suck, that's why no one showed up, which you don't know to be true, or and make up whatever story you want. I mean, it's like, this is what our brain does anyway. We're going to replay the stuff. So make it a happy ending.
Yeah, for sure. Regarding your 7 books, if you think back to when you wrote that very first book and your most recent book, what would today, Kathy, tell that very first time author, Kathy, about the process of writing a book?
Ooh. I did all of my books exactly the way I wanted to. So I think I would reiterate that of don't compromise things. The first publisher I used, it was a self-publishing program. This was before we had Amazon and CreateSpace and now KDP, that sort of thing. I could have been, I don't know that I'd change anything really. I think I'd relax more and be confident that I was doing the right thing. I think I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to make sure it was right and perfect. But that's just sort of me anyway. So I could tell myself to relax more with everything. I don't know. I'm so proud of my first book. I'm proud of all of my books. I'm working on my 8th right now. So I honestly don't know that I'd change. I think maybe telling myself to relax more, take more time with it. I think I felt rushed. It was the tyranny of the urgent. I think I could have been more careful with laying it out and the editing. So yeah, slow it down, just relax into the process.
Beautiful. Before, I'll wrap this up in the next few minutes. I know you have obligations, but I would love to hear more about trapeze and the lessons that you've learned as a trapeze artist, how they map across to the rest of life.
Yeah, trapeze, I thought was going to be this like one-time thing, cross it off the list, I can say I did it now sort of thing. And I became so addicted so fast. It is the most fun. Every year at HypnoThoughts, I take a group of people. We're going to go again this year, or you know, next year, whatever, 2021. It's a mindfulness practice. Because if you're not truly present in each moment of it, it gets screwed up. Swinging is the most complicated thing I think I've ever done in my life. Swinging, jumping off swing. It's so freaking hard to get the timing right, to get the body position right. And as soon as you change, this is how it's a parallel for life. As soon as you change one aspect of it, it changes everything moving forward. Mm-hmm. So if I do this part differently, then everything moving forward is different. You have to adjust everything when you make a change. But also, you know, we all have these things that scare us. It's a mindfulness practice in that you have to stay present. You have to listen for those calls, because if you skip what the person's saying, you can either get hurt, which I've done 3 times, or at the very least, like you miss your trick. You don't do the thing right. It doesn't work out. So it's about being present in that moment. And it's a parallel for life in that, you know, there's something we have to do that scares us or that we want to do that scares us. And that's sort of like trapeze. So you stand at the base of that ladder and it looks really high. It's like 25 feet tall. And you start to climb this very shaky ladder and you get to the top and it's unstable and you're not sure what to hold on to. And they hand you a really heavy bar, which is that thing you've got to do. And then you jump off that board or they push you. If you won't jump, we'll finally just push you. And you fly and you do your trick and somebody catches you, or if they don't, there's a net. And I think that's what we forget, is there's always a net. There's always a person, a thing, an idea, our own inner wise person, our own inner strength that will catch us and allow that fall to not be as catastrophic as we think it's going to be. And I've been to so many trapeze class, hundreds of trapeze classes, and every so many, there's someone who is terrified. Just this last weekend, there was a woman that spent 10 minutes up there going, I can't do it. And she'd let go. And then she'd grab, I can't do it, you know. And finally, she did it. And then on her second time up, took her a little bit, still not as quick. I mean, not as long as it took the first time. But by the third time, she was doing the somersault. She said it was the most great, exciting, exhilarating thing she's ever done. She's ready to come back. She said she's never felt so much pride at being able to overcome the fear of doing that. And I think that's what happens when we actually dive in and just, you know, take that leap. So this is, you know, trapeze is, it's become a community for me. It's become my favorite exercise. The rig here in town is how I met my boyfriend. You know, trapeze has added so much to my life. And I encourage you, it doesn't have to be trapeze. If you're a hypnotherapist and you're at HypnoThoughts Live next year and you want to come with us, hell yeah, let's go do it every year. But try something. Doesn't have to be Warthog Carpaccio. Doesn't have to be trapeze. Maybe it's, you know, a different drive to work. Maybe it's a different order from your favorite place that delivers. Maybe it's, you know, I mean, there's so many things we can do to step outside our comfort zone, to stretch ourselves and grow. You're not still lifting the same weight you were when you were two. You grow and you evolve. And I think we forget that it's the same thing in life, that we just have to push ourselves a little bit. It doesn't have to be huge, but it's a progressive step forward to get those things you want. I think we forget about that a lot.
Absolutely. So this jumped out at me. This is kind of a personal, for my own personal gratification. And if it doesn't go anywhere, I can edit this out. But you mentioned that you've hurt yourself three times. And I'm wondering, is there one that stands out to you? And if so, what did you learn from that? If you could go back and not hurt yourself and not get that lesson, would you?
No. I would hurt myself again. I mean, which sounds so weird, but it was a lesson in that. It was my first time flying without safety lines. And when you take off the safety lines, you take off the safety, it's in the title. And I was at a rig that I had never flown at before. So that was different. I made my first trick with no safety lines. So invigorating, coolest thing ever. I did my trick. And one of the goals when you start to get good is you want to do your trick and then you want to return to the bar that you left and then you get back up on the board. It's called round trip. I had never done that before. So I did my trick out of lines. I swung with the catcher. I turned and oh my God, the bar was there. And I grabbed the bar and I was like, I'm getting on the board. I'm getting on the board. And I went to swing up to get on the board and I didn't realize I had grabbed the bar like that and not like that. I was thinking too far forward. I wasn't in that present moment. I was thinking to the next thing and I was so pressuring myself to get on the board that I forgot I didn't do the step before that, which was grab the fucking bar. You know, I didn't have it right. I didn't have it right. I should have let the bar, I should have pushed it out of the way and not taken it. But I was so set on, and I think here's part of it too. Everybody else is getting back on the board. Am I the only one that's not getting back on the board? And there was that pressure of, I was surrounded by people who were so good. And I let that influence my present moment. I was trying to compete, because I do that, with the people around me rather than having my reality and just taking that, holy crap, I just did my first stuff out of lines. Why was that not enough? And I think that's also a habit of mine. You know, the day my diploma came for my PhD, I turned to my client and said, oh, good, now I'm going to do blah, blah, blah. And she goes, stop it. And I said, what? And I don't normally have clients yelling at me. She's like, you just shit all over your PhD. She's like, you literally just got the diploma. Can you just be with that for a minute before you start planning the next thing? And I went, yeah. But it's, you know, it takes people around us who are going to call us on our bullshit. And that's what she did. She's like, what are you doing? Yes, congrats. What do you mean now the next thing? Can you just be with that thing? And I think that's one of the downsides of being as driven as I am, is it's what's the next thing? The this is why I can't possibly climb Mount Everest with Carl, because I'm gonna be looking at the next big mountain and I don't wanna do that, you know? So there's that place of balance of, yes, achieve things. And, you know, I listen to my bio every time I do a show like this and I go, oh my God, I've done like such cool stuff. Like, this is so impressive to me of the things that I've been able to accomplish. And at what point do I say, that's enough? Can I just sit at home with my boyfriend and play Dungeons and Dragons? Place of balance.
Yeah. I love that. I so appreciate you sharing that, because I think that is a common experience for many people. Mm-hmm. Have there been moments and glimpses when you've been able to do that, to just sit with your boyfriend and play Dungeons and Dragons? And how would you recommend to someone else to cultivate that? Because I found when we're recommending to other people, sometimes it gets in here too and helps to transform for things for ourselves.
There's a global pandemic it was the best thing. One of the best things that came out of it for me was that pause. And it's funny, because when I teach meditation and breath work and mindfulness and that sort of, I talk about taking a pause. And in that pause, there's power, because it gives us the opportunity to decide whether we're going to respond or whether we're going to react. And I do that when I do my breath work, and I do that in these little bits when I meditate. But I realized I wasn't actually pausing in my life. And, you know, I was seeing 25, 30 clients a week. I was dancing 5 days a week. I was doing trapeze when I could. I was traveling with speaking gigs. I was working on the next book. I mean, my to-do list was endless. It still is. And I realized that in being that busy, I was running towards this success that it was never going to end. There was always going to be the next thing. And I was running away from a relationship that I didn't want to be in. So staying that busy was a great way to not have time to deal with that thing that I didn't want to be in. And we have to ask ourselves that, why am I so busy? Why am I choosing again and again and again to fill that plate when I'm not hungry anymore? So when COVID hit and my business closed and the speaking gigs ended, and I sat in my house going, oh shit. And you know what I didn't do? I didn't write my book, and I didn't reach out to people. And I watched friends of mine get gig after gig after gig, and they're writing, you know, talking about all the stuff they're doing. And I went, I need a break. And I think it was the first breath I took in 20 years of starting my practice. Wow. Massage, hypnosis, all this. And so it gave me a chance to sit and go, what do I want? Not what do I think I should have, not what others, and no one's pressuring me, it's all me. What am I pressuring myself to do? What do I think I'm supposed to be doing? You know what I wanna do is lay in the hammock with a glass of wine at 1 o'clock on a Wednesday and play Pokemon. So I did. I binge watched TV shows. I mean, like, and I was talking with, we had a quick Facebook exchange, Richard Barker, who's another amazing hypnotist and just as type A as me, if not more. I'm not telling tales, I'm sure he'd admit that. And, you know, he said that one of the greatest things that came out of COVID for him was realizing he was too busy and to allow him to take a break. So I think it motivated people to be not as motivated. And I can fully attribute to my new life perspective on having that forced pause. Having someone push the button and go sit there and be quiet for a second.
That's so beautiful. And so from that perspective and having that pause, what advice would you give yourself or someone else moving forward when this pandemic has, who knows what's going to happen or when it's going to happen, but when things return to some sort of normalcy or the new normal, what would you do in the future to ensure you get that pause when you need it?
Yeah. Well, you have to decide what's important to you. And if it is about, I want $200,000 a year. If that's truly your value, and that's totally cool. I think we all deserve to make as much money as we want. The universe is abundant and we deserve that prosperity. If your value is to work yourself ragged and make a shit ton of money, go do that thing. That's awesome. And I think for a while that was my drive. I was looking for that security. I was looking for that. Well, but what if I can't work? And I was in that lack mindset that was making me work more and more and more and more. And now I realize what I value is laying in the hammock and reading and spending a night binge watching something with my boyfriend or going on day trips. I mean, there were afternoons where we'd spend the day at the beach or we'd drive to somewhere and hang out for a couple hours. I wasn't doing that before. I was too busy working. And so I realized everything's going to be fine. You're going to have enough, you know? You just have to know what you want. And I think this is why I work with people with their values, because if your value is autonomy, family, you know, communication, adventure, you're not going to make the same choices as if your values are fame, money, attention, admiration, you know, that kind of thing. So know who you are, know what you want, and then you can move forward on the path to get it. But if you don't know what you want, you don't get into an Uber and say, okay, and hope they take you somewhere good. You know where you want to go, and then you trust that that map, whether it's Waze or the Uber driver or the train, is going to take you to where you want to go. You don't have to know the route. You just have to know the destination, and the route's going to unfold in front of you.
I love that so much. So do you have time for a couple more questions?
Yeah.
Okay. This one also is for my own personal gratification, and we can edit it out if we need to. I recently had someone, I've actually had two people say this to me in the past few days, that most hypnotists are not working full-time. They're not creating a sustainable income. And I have seen this in my own observation. I know several hypnotists who are doing extremely well and are running referral-only practices. And so I'm curious what your perspective is on this and what advice you would give a person who is perhaps struggling as a hypnotist and wanting to establish a practice where they can thrive and care for their, you know, be a breadwinner.
Yeah. Well, that's a hard one, because there's not an easy answer to that. It's such an individual thing. You've got to be good at what you do. You've got to be able to language that you're good at what you do, and you have to know how to find those people. So when I do my marketing talks, that's one thing I talk about, you know, who is your ideal audience? And it's interesting, because I can take it back more to the massage thing. When I first started doing massage, I marketed every place I could. I did articles for local papers. I did ads in local publications. I went to mixers. I went to women's events. I went to places where I set up a freaking table and sat there all day massaging runners and cyclists for free and hoping to go. I mean, I did everything. I took all the spaghetti and I went to see what stuck. It was exhausting, but incredibly successful. I mean, I went from, you know, zero to completely full practice in a matter of months. I hit six figures probably the second year in, because I was busting my butt. I hired a bunch of therapists. I mean, it skyrocketed. I was also, I didn't have good boundaries. So if someone called and they wanted a massage, I took it. Even if it was a technique I didn't like, or, oh, I had to drive too far, or I wish they were paying me more, but I don't know how to ask for that. Or, you know, looking back at that, I would change so many things of how I started my practice. Not change how I wrote the book, definitely change how I did practice. I had clients I couldn't stand. They were abusive to me. They had boundary issues. I didn't know how to fire them. I needed their money. All these stories we tell ourselves. So I think it's a matter of knowing what you want. And over time, I realized I hated doing Swedish massage. I hated doing house calls because it was exhausting. I hated doing Swedish massage, and I didn't like doing spa stuff. So once I realized that, then I could say, look, I like deep tissue trigger point. I like working with people who are either injured, elderly, pregnant, know their bodies and need what I do. If you want me to come to your house, I'm charging you a lot more because I don't like it. So I think once you start to realize what you want, what does your ideal practice look like? What does your day look like? Do you wake up at 6 and hit the ground running? Do you wake up at 10, lounge in bed with your spouse before your day starts? You know, set those parameters and then create from there. Because again, you have to know what you want. And the pause that COVID gave me is now I know what I want. I don't want to be working as hard as I was before. So how do I make the same amount of money? Do I raise my rates? Do I have a package? Do I do some online thing where people can download stuff and I make passive income? Do I up my speaking gigs? I mean, there's so many things you can change depending on what you want. So though I just spent a lot of time answering that question after I said it's not an easy answer, yeah, I don't know if that answered the question, but you have to know what you want. What does your ideal practice look like? How much money do you want to make? Story, because I love telling stories. When I was an actor in LA, I wanted more acting gigs. Of course, that's why I was in Hollywood. And so I started doing the affirmation. I'm a working actor. I'm a working actor. Well, then I realized, well, yeah, hell yeah, I'm working like crazy, doing all these shows for free. I'm a paid professional actor. I was saying that. I got my first paid gig. I was doing touring children's theater. I was going up and down the coast of California, and I was educating these kids, and I was doing these really fun shows, and I was getting paid $5 an hour. Oh, the universe. I was a paid professional actor. I needed to be more specific. And so if you talk to someone like Victoria Gallagher, who does, you know, law of attraction stuff, my God, be specific with what you want. I wasn't specific. So now when I chart out things like that, I'm like, look, I want 10 clients a week. I want this much money a year. I want this many days off. I want this many days for vacation. I want, spell it out precisely. And then your brain goes, ooh, okay, what can I do to get that thing?
That's excellent. I love that answer. I love everything about that answer because I feel like there's nuggets there for everyone. I once had someone talk, I think I was doing a presentation with Freddie Jacquin, and we were talking about the business end of hypnosis and how to build the business. And somebody in the chat said, well, I just want to work part-time and I don't want to work that hard to bring clients in. And I wanted to type, you need to find a new industry. Because for me, I think there's this balance between what you just said, really getting laser focused on what it is you want. And then that fine tunes the reticular activating system to start to notice all these actions you can take. And if you're not taking action, and if you don't love this so much that you're willing to eat, sleep, and breathe it, yeah, while finding that balance and cuddling with your boyfriend while you play Dungeons and Dragons, I don't think that a person, I mean, I could be wrong, but it's highly unlikely that a person is going to find success without a piece of that drive.
I agree with that. And I think it, I've had so many talks with younger people about, you know, what they really want to do and what their parents force them into. And, you know, I'm stunned in this day and age, there's still parents like making their kids go to college for something. I'm talking to a client during a session of massage, and she was doing her PhD the same time I was. I was doing it like 20 years later than she was. And we were talking about our programs, and she said, you know, it must be really nice to like what you're doing. And I said, what do you mean? I said, do you not like your PhD? It was in psychology. And she said, no, I really don't like the program at all. And I said, well, then why are you spending all this time and money to do a PhD, which is not an easy process, if you're not into that thing? She said, well, my parents are making me. And I was floored by that. And I said, okay, well, what do you think you want to do? And she said, well, this is kind of stupid. And I went, no, there's no stupid. I was a theater major, so come on. She goes, well, I really want to be a baker. And I said, really? She said, I love baking for my friends. I love that. I watch all the shows. I like to run a bakery. And I said, oh my God, that's the coolest thing ever. I said, well, have you ever worked in a bakery? And she goes, no, you know, I'm always in school. And I said, I have an assignment for you. She goes, okay. I said, you're approaching summer break. Do you actually get to take a summer break? She said, yeah. I said, do you have to have a job? She said, yeah, my parents make me. Not a surprise. And I said, okay, I want you to contact the bakeries in town. See if you can get a job. I said, even if you like intern for a week where you don't get paid, just get in that environment and see if you like it. And she said, oh my God, I never thought about that. That's a really good idea. 6 months later, she comes back and she said, Kathy, you changed my life, which we love to hear, right? But yes. I didn't remember what she was talking about. And I said, really? I said, how the hell did I do that? She goes, do you remember our conversation about our PhDs? By this time I was finished with mine. She was still doing hers. And I said, oh yeah, that you didn't like it. I said, well, what happened? She goes, you know, I got a job this past summer in a bakery. And I said, oh my God. I said, that is so cool. I said, how was it? She looks at me, she goes, I fucking hated it. And I went, really? And she goes, I realize that I like baking for fun. That is not what I would want to do for a career. And it made me realize that what I could do with my PhD, and she just launched into this whole thing, exuberant about the opportunity she was going to have with this PhD. Regrets. regrets are the worst thing ever. And now she doesn't have to get to 80 and wonder if she should have been a baker. She experimented with it enough to realize that she could make that decision with confidence and with knowledge and with all the information. You know, it's like holding up two bags. Which one do you want? Well, what's in them? Can't tell you. You need to know what's in the bag before you make an informed decision. And once you have that knowledge is power. And so she followed my advice, which was so phenomenal to know, and it changed her life. So if you don't want to do that thing, stop doing it. You know, if you're not truly jazzed by it, if you're not living it, breathing it for that moment, then don't do it. If it's a struggle, it's not the right thing for you.
This is so phenomenal. I feel like I could take any segment of this conversation and turn it into a standalone words of wisdom with Kathy.
Good.
What is the best way for someone who is intrigued to follow up and learn more about you and connect with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So I got a couple sites. KathyGruber.com is where all my books are. You can find out about my speaking. There's a couple lectures there that you can watch. KathyGruber.coach is how to find me if you want to do business coaching, life coaching, stress, relationships, all that good stuff. Healing Circle Hypnotherapy is my hypnosis site. Yeah, and I'm on all the social media. I'm all over Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. Did I miss anything? All over YouTube, you can see me doing crazy trapeze tricks. So yeah, I love chatting with people. I love helping people with their business and moving forward. So let me know if I can help.
Amazing. I will link to all those things as well as a link to your books. And I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I have been so excited about this. I have wanted to connect with you since I first heard that conversation. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. And thank you to everyone for listening. I'm so grateful you've listened all the way to the end. What is one tiny action step you'll take now based on an aha moment you got during the podcast? Maybe that life-changing action step is to come accept the gift I have for you at theimpostermonster.com. Head there right now to get your powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, that lets you make important decisions and get crystal clear about your next step forward on this path of purpose in your one great and precious life.